This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The numbers are staggering. African Americans, 12% of the total population, now make up almost half of the more than 1 million people in this country living with HIV. And data indicates they're also the least likely to know they're infected. Much of the recent media discussion of AIDS in the black community has focused on the idea of the down low, men who identify as straight while having sex with both women and other men. Real numbers are obviously hard to come by, and most experts say this is only a small part of the problem. Other factors include high incarceration rates, distrust of the medical establishment, unwillingness to talk about uncomfortable issues, and myths, urban legends, if you will, about who's at risk, about prevention, about the meaning of safe sex. And the numbers tell another story about the failure of the government, healthcare workers, and community leaders to communicate the facts. Later in the program, Senator John Sununu joins us to talk about reports of a massacre in Uzbekistan and the link between human rights and American military bases. But first, HIV and AIDS in the black community. This hour, we'll talk with researchers about what we know and what we don't, and with those tackling prevention on the ground, and we want to hear from you. For our African-American listeners, what do you hear about AIDS? Where does your information come from? Is this something you talk about? And if so, where does that conversation take place? At work, at church, at home? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Our first guest is Donovan Floyd, an HIV testing and counseling coordinator with the South Beach AIDS Project. And he joins us by phone from his clinic in Miami, Florida. Good of you to be with us today.
Thank you.
You've been working in AIDS outreach for a number of years now. What makes the African-American male population different from other at-risk groups in terms of finding and treating them?
I think quite often most of the issues are fear. Fear is still a great factor in whether individuals come in to get tested, where they're to be found. Oftentimes, most of our male African-American individuals come in, not so much because it was their initial idea, but oftentimes they've been kind of urged by friends, family, girlfriends, and when it hits close to home, a close family member who may have recently found out they were either infected or may have passed away, These conversations oftentimes do not occur because, you know, we live under the perception, you know, not knowing is better. And, you know, the fear factor is oftentimes the greatest risk.
So when you say fear, you mean fear of what they'll find out?
Fear of what they'll find out, fear of what family and friends will think. Oftentimes, doesn't matter heterosexual, homosexual, the issue is, you know, what were you doing that makes you think you should go and get tested? Or, you know, you obviously, you know, you're fooling around with men on the side. These are still issues and misconceptions that still lie in the community.
So would you say that from your experience, then, homosexuality is more sensitive in the black community?
I don't think it's more sensitive. I think in most minority communities, same-sex encounters tend to be hushed. Individuals still feel the pressure to live up to a certain standard, depending on the kinds of families you come from, religious or, you know, of families that may be influential in the communities, there's still a standard that you're supposed to live up to and you have to maintain. But I don't think that it's more prevalent in the black community or the African-American community. I think it's prevalent in most communities. Hispanic communities here in Miami as well, Caribbean communities here in Miami, we find it fairly pervasive amongst all people of color.
I wonder, the people you talk to, the people who come in, obviously, as you say, many of them are fearful. Where do they get their information about AIDS?
Oftentimes, most of my clients that I see and things I hear from people in the community, most of their initial information come from their friends. It's almost like, you know, who do most kids hear about sex from? Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, the first time they hear about sex, it's from one of their friends. And it's the same thing with HIV information and HIV testing and prevention work. The friends are oftentimes the first ones who, you know, who they discuss issues with about HIV and how it's transmitted. And when they are, you know, and when they are afraid, you know, the friends are the first one they turn to. And then they come in to see me. And oftentimes that conversation is about oh, well, I came in with a friend just because he was coming in, or a friend told me that he heard something about someone I may have been with.
What have you found over the years that works?
Oftentimes, what I have used to really try and pull individuals in is conversation and a repetitive nature of the places I go. Oftentimes, conversations, we've heard it on more than one occasion that, you know, when you go to a barbershop or a hair salon, you hear everything about what's going on in the community, what's going on at church, and you find out different information. And those are some of the best places to begin those conversations and to build on information that's available and ways of getting people interested and getting tested. One of the first places I started doing outreach on a semi-regular basis, and it wasn't attached to work or anything, it was because I felt there was a need, was the barbershop. My local barbershop, I'm there at least once a week or twice a month. And, you know, I knew that, you know, many of the guys in the barbershop, either the individuals that cut hair or the patrons, you know, were sexually active, more than one partner. So I began just bringing condoms in, and that began, you know, people asking questions, well, why are you bringing these condoms in? And that got the conversation started. And after a while, even once I stopped doing it and someone else is doing it, the conversation still came to me, well, Donovan, I have a friend. And oftentimes I'll receive phone calls at home on my cell phone or, you know, my home phone, and it's people calling, you know, because they have a friend or they heard from a friend that I do testing and they can come in and get tested. And that builds that rapport in the community, and that's the way conversations and prevention work needs to continue. There has to be constant conversations. Most of the community has sex, but we don't talk about the types of sex we have and who we're having sex with, because that's supposed to be private. And that also brings out risk that we're willing to take. Oh, this person, oh, you know, he's okay or she's okay, but we don't talk about what's going on.
Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. And let's begin with Lee, and Lee's calling us from South Florida.
Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
The lady asked me if I wanted to talk about this. It's further than I want. I need to say a couple of things. First of all, I've done some research, simple research, in over the last 5, 6, 7 years. AIDS was concocted. It was man-made. It was designed to get rid of a certain undesirable amount in of the population. And I had one family member who contracted AIDS, and when I spoke with him about it, he said, I said, well, come home. You're too far away for us to really help you the way we need to, and you need to be helped. He said the same thing you all touched on earlier. I am going to be afraid that someone will say I'm a homosexual, I'm this, I'm that. How did he get it? Was he shooting drugs? Was he doing this, doing that? I said, none of that matters. What matters is that you're sick, you need us, and I'm here for you. None of that matters. How you got it is not important to me, I told him. The fact that you have it and what can we do about it is very important. Thank you. I'll take my comments out there.
Okay, Lee. Thanks very much. Donovan Floyd, how do you deal with, and no disrespect to Lee, but this is a myth.
It is. Well, part of it is, it's once again, I've been working in the field, I've heard every possible myth that's been out there since the beginning of the epidemic and the pandemic around the world. And basically, it's the information. Unfortunately, you know, there are certain people that are going to believe what they believe. And oftentimes, especially in African-American communities, everyone looks back at the Tuskegee Institute and what happened there. And, you know,
notorious syphilis study, yes.
Exactly. And that becomes what individuals point at. And it's our job to be patient with individuals and to walk them through. Sometimes you just have to hold their hands like they're little kids and they're learning how to cross the street from the first time. We have to be patient and continue letting them know what the real information is. You know, unprotected sexual encounters, what that means, what does it mean when we talk about sex. So we have to continue to have it's about conversations. We don't have real conversations with the people we see and the people we're reaching out to. We just throw information out at them rather than having conversations with them.
Donovan Floyd, I know you're running the clinic as well as talk to us. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
That's fine. Thank you so much.
Donovan Floyd, an HIV and testing and counseling coordinator with the South Beach Age Project, joined us by phone from his office in Miami. With us now is Dr. Ronald Valdeseri, the deputy director of the CDC's Center for HIV, STD, and TB Prevention. That's an awful lot of letters. The Center for Disease Control, Center for HIV, STD, of course, sexually transmitted disease and tuberculosis prevention. He's with us by phone from his office in Atlanta, Georgia, where the National HIV Prevention Conference concluded yesterday. Good of you to be with us today.
Thank you.
High amongst the topics of discussion at the conference were that new CDC report on the prevalence of HIV/AIDS in various at-risk groups. The numbers for African Americans are sobering.
That's right. CDC released new estimates of the prevalence of HIV, meaning how many people in the U.S. are currently living with HIV. And for the first time since the beginning of the epidemic, the U.S. has surpassed the 1 million mark. We estimate that between 1,039,000 and 1,185,000 people are living in the U.S. with HIV. And as you mentioned, the number of African Americans in this estimate is quite high. We estimate that approximately 47%, nearly half of this number, are African American individuals, 34% white and 17% Hispanic.
And one of the conversations we're having today is why, out of such a disproportion to their numbers, are blacks affected by HIV?
Well, I think the first important thing to say for the listeners is that HIV does not respect any race or ethnicity, and that anyone who engages in unsafe behavior, whether that's sexual behavior or injection drug use, is at risk for contracting the virus. As to the question of why is...
And I've posed it at a most awkward moment because we're running out of time in this segment. We'll take it up first thing when we get back from the break, okay?
Great.
All right, we're talking with Dr. Ronald Valdeseri at the Centers for Disease Control, and we're taking more of your calls when we get back from the break. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email TOTN at NPR.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. According to newly released data, nearly half the people living with HIV or AIDS in this country are black. This hour, we're talking about HIV in the black community, reasons for its spread, attitudes towards the disease, and new techniques that activists are using to combat it. Of course, you're invited to join us, and we especially want to hear from our black listeners. Given those numbers, is AIDS a conversation that is ongoing in the black community? Where do you talk about it? With whom do you talk about it? Or is this something that is still hushed up? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email us, TOTN at NPR.org. We're talking with Donald Ronald Valdeseri, Deputy Director of the CDC's Center for HIV, STD, and TB Prevention. And just before the break, Dr. Valdeseri, you were just beginning to talk about why there's such a prevalence, out of all proportions to their numbers in the population, of HIV and AIDS in the black community.
Yes, I began by reminding all the listeners that race and ethnicity by themselves are not risk factors for HIV infection, and that anyone of any race or ethnicity who engages in unsafe behavior, whether that's sexual behavior or drug use behavior, is at risk for contracting the virus. However, when we look at the extremely high numbers among African Americans, I think that there's no single reason. Certainly, concerns about socioeconomic factors, limited access to high-quality health care, perhaps in some groups, high rates of other sexually transmissible diseases that can help facilitate transmission of HIV. These are all factors. I think the other important factor, especially when we're talking about gay and bisexual African American men, relates to very high rates of undiagnosed HIV infection. So that if you have persons who are infected with HIV and don't know it, they are more likely to unknowingly transmit that virus to partners. And that was another very sobering study that was released this week in Atlanta, looking at gay and bisexual men in five American cities across the United States. And in this particular study, nearly half, 46%, of the African American men who were in that research study were infected with HIV, extraordinarily high levels of infection. And among those African American men, two-thirds were unaware that they were infected with HIV.
Wow, two-thirds. Let's get some callers in on the conversation. Tony's with us. Tony's calling from Detroit.
Hey, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I'm a student at Morehouse College, which is the all-male historical black institution in Atlanta. And the AIDS connection with homosexuality is a very sensitive and loaded subject at my school. It's such a taboo, and it almost it seems as if it's like the worst thing you can be among the African-American communities, like maybe a homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
It is my understanding that down loin has always existed, and why now has it reached such huge heights? I guess my question is, how can I, as a human rights activist and a leader on my campus, hold like a forum to begin talking about it? Because the downloading topic is such a conversation that you can't even defend yourself. Because once you defend yourself, it's, oh, what are you hiding? Are you a downloader yourself? And then it completely takes your thunder away from genuinely trying to reach the masses.
Well, Dr. Valdeseri, as I understand it, down low is not the primary problem here.
No, but let me start out by saying to Tony that, first of all, I think that the more that various communities, whether we're talking about young men in college, young men and women in college, various communities can talk about the important health consequences of HIV for African Americans, the better off we'll be as a nation, because government alone can't turn around this epidemic. Certainly, we have a very important responsibility to play, but communities themselves need to step up to the plate. Now, in terms of the down low phenomenon, which for those listeners who might not be aware of it, refers to a homosexually active male who doesn't identify as gay necessarily, who's having sex with female partners and not telling them about it. This is not a phenomenon that is limited to African Americans, and one of the studies released at the conference shows that there are some men who have sex with other men and don't reveal that to female partners. However, it does not appear to be the kind of major issue that the media has portrayed it to be. I think the take-home message here is, whether we're talking about men or women, gay-identified or not gay-identified, no matter who's sleeping with whom, that before a person gets involved in a sexual relationship, it makes a lot of sense for them to know their partner and know what their partner is about, and not make assumptions that, because someone doesn't act a certain way or talk in a certain way, that maybe they do or don't sleep with men. I think the issue here is that people need to talk to one another and know their partners before they get involved in a sexual relationship. And what's optimal is for a serious, committed relationship, for people to be tested for HIV and other STDs before they engage in sex.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way to prevent transmission.
But, Tony, I was interested in something else you were saying about the difficulty of, if you raise the subject, then people are filled with fear about you.
Yeah, you can't even defend yourself, because the very essence of defending yourself is saying that I'm guilty already. And it's just one of those things in which I just don't even touch it. We just don't even touch it. And that's why it's kind of like that big white elephant, pink elephant, that walks around campus and just no one talks about it.
Tony, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. And good luck.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Let's go now to Frank. And Frank's with us from Kennett Square in Pennsylvania.
Hello?
Frank, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I have a concern with regards to inmate populations. I read an article in the paper 2 days ago, which said that AIDS rates were very high in prisons, and we all know about the racial disparity of that exists in prisons. And the comment, the paper went on further to say that inmates were being released to communities and effectively feeding that prisons were seeding communities with AIDS, because there was no program for AIDS prevention in prisons, And these populations were at high risk, and when they were released to their communities, they were taking the AIDS with them and spreading the epidemic to their communities.
Dr. Valdeseri?
Yes, I think the whole issue of HIV prevention and HIV awareness in correctional settings, which doesn't just include prisons, but also jails and other kinds of detention units, is extremely important. There are, in fact, some programs in the United States that are very effective and very well run, where inmates have access to confidential HIV testing and testing for other STDs and information about prevention in recognition of the fact that jails and prisons are, in fact, part of the community. I think many Americans have this misconception that people are in prison and they're there for life and they never return to the community, when in reality, many studies have shown, as the caller has indicated, that people do move in and out of the community. I think it's important not to stigmatize prisoners and other people in correctional settings. Instead, what we want to do is recognize that these are very important opportunities to reach men and women, many of whom are at very high risk for HIV and other STDs, and many of whom are already infected. Now, we don't have completely accurate assessment of the degree to which HIV is present in these settings, but we do know from several studies that, as the caller pointed out, HIV and STD can be found in these settings. But the point here is to focus on these as opportunities to prevent further transmission of the virus, and for people who are already infected to get them diagnosed and into care. And there are some model programs doing that.
Frank, thanks very much for the phone call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Here's an email from Bill in Delray Beach in Florida. And Dr. Valdeseri, this last one before we let you go. Please ask your guest if AIDS infection rates rise with poverty. And if they do, is the correlation greater or lesser than any correlation to race? If poverty has a high correlation, does a racial analysis unnecessarily feed negative stereotypes about black morality?
Very, very good question. And that's why I was careful to talk about socioeconomic issues up front in the interview, that it is very hard, in fact, to separate the contribution of poverty or lessened socioeconomic status from race. And probably much of what we're seeing is a reflection when we talk about health disparities among African Americans and other communities of color, much of what we're seeing is a reflection of decreased access to healthcare services. So this caller raises an extremely important observation that it has been shown in a number of analyses that HIV infection, as well as other STDs, tend to occur at disproportionately high levels among populations that are poor or have less access to quality health care services. However, having said that, again, I have to reinforce that HIV it doesn't look at your IRS form before infection takes place, and that anyone, rich or poor, white or black, can become infected with the virus if they engage in unsafe behavior. And this doesn't necessarily mean having large numbers of sexual partners. One of the important messages for women, and it applies equally to gay and bisexual men, is that in some populations, the background rates of infection are so high that even sex with a single partner can be risky. So again, the point here is know your partner before you become intimate. Really, it's the best possible approach is to be tested and find out whether or not one is infected with HIV. And then if infection is present, people can get into medical care and they can take steps to prevent transmitting the virus to their partners.
Dr. Valisseri, thanks very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you for your interest in this very important subject.
Ronald Valisseri is the Deputy Director of the CDC Center for HIV, STD, and TB Prevention, and he joined us by phone from his office in Atlanta, talking about new studies released by the CDC about the prevalence of AIDS in minority communities, especially. We're talking about AIDS in Black America today, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Joining us now to talk about attitudes toward HIV amongst gay black men is Dr. Robert Klitzman, a research scientist and assistant professor of clinical psychiatry at Columbia University. He's also the author of Being Positive, The Lives of Men and Women with HIV. Nice to talk to you today.
Hi, thanks very much.
We had a caller earlier in the program who said he thought AIDS was concocted, manufactured. Is this a common belief?
Unfortunately, it is, much more than we'd like. I should say that, interestingly, that myth was actually first started by the KGB, and it was one of the last things that the KGB did before the wall in Berlin came down and before the end of the Soviet Empire, is they actively tried to promote the belief in Africa and elsewhere that HIV was a U.S. government plot. Unfortunately, that belief has continued, and I think what it shows, as was said by Donald from South Beach, is that there are a lot of sensitive issues here that public health people and physicians and government officials need to take account of in order to know how to be as sensitive as possible to the fact that African Americans often feel very much disenfranchised from the healthcare system. And we need very much to address that.
Here's an email question we got from Tracy. I think a big point is being missed. Many urban, poor, disenfranchised black males especially don't expect to live long or well anyway, so why bother with safe sex?
Well, there are definitely issues of fatalism out there. At the same time, an important issue is that we now have very good treatment available for people with HIV. And I think that that's a very important message to get out there, that with highly active antiretroviral treatments, or the cocktail as many people call it, people who are HIV infected can live a very long time, arguably as long as they live even if they weren't HIV infected. And I think that message needs to get out there, that one reason to get tested now is that you can find out if you are infected that you're able to take treatment that'll improve your health and ideally lower the risk that you may transmit HIV to other people. I should say at the same time, there is a fear among many people that there's a perception out there that now that we have good treatment, that there is less of a risk of HIV. In other words, if you get infected with HIV these days, what's the big deal? There's good treatment available. And so there is concern that we don't want to give the message that the availability of good treatment now means that you are not able to infect others or that your partners can't infect you. People still need to protect themselves against HIV.
Yet, clearly, the message, as you're telling us, the message is not getting through. Are people looking at new ways of trying to reach people with these, to A, correct misperceptions, and B, to provide correct information?
It's a very important issue. There's absolutely a need to reach people about these messages, and people have been trying very hard. One concern is that a very effective way to reach people is through the communities that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And Caucasian gay men are often involved with gay communities of mostly Caucasian people but in which there are messages that are disseminated. People go to a gay bar that's mostly a white gay bar or whatever, and there are pamphlets and information. A problem that African-American gay men have is that they often get a double whammy in terms of stigma, and they often feel not completely accepted by the African-American community, and many don't feel as comfortable as they might otherwise feel in the gay community, which, reflecting the demographics of the U.S. as a whole, tends to be white. And so they're not a member of either community, and therefore they don't get prevention messages that might be targeted at a community. So we're missing an opportunity to develop programs that are targeted to them through communities that they feel comfortable being part of. And I think these are challenges for community leaders and public health officials and others to try to help develop communities, et cetera.
Yeah, we just have a few seconds left in the segment, but Donovan Floyd, we were talking to earlier, he said he went to his barbershop, but clearly that sort of one-on-one or even one-on-ten approach, that's not going to be very – it's going to be hard to reach people with that, those kind of ratios.
It is hard, but I think every step is an important step. And if each of those 10 people tell 10 other people and they tell 10 other people, we'll be beginning to get the message out to a lot of folks.
Hang with us. We're going to continue talking about AIDS in Black America when we come back from a break. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-989-TALK, the email address, totn@npr.org. We'll also talk with the senator about his on-the-ground view of the situation in Uzbekistan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we continue our discussion about the spread of HIV in the Black community. African Americans account for shockingly high percentages of both new infections and those already living with the virus. Our guest is Dr. Robert Klitzman, the author of Being Positive, The Lives of Men and Women with HIV. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is Kinsey. Kinsey's calling us from Kansas City.
Yes, my question was just on the cost effectiveness. I know that a lot of times insurance providers don't pay for testing. I myself have not even been tested because of it being so expensive.
Dr. Klitzman?
Well, there are a number of options you have. Most city and local health departments do offer free testing, and many offer free anonymous testing. And I'd encourage you to even give an anonymous phone call to your local health department and just ask them, and the odds are probably that they will be able to offer you free anonymous HIV testing.
Oh, they do provide free testing. I didn't realize that.
Yes, and that's important that people know that it is available.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
The call, Kinsey. Churches play an important leadership role in African-American communities, and some AIDS activists argue that Black churches need to get more involved in spreading awareness about the disease. Joining us now is Ron Weatherford, a United Methodist minister at Bethel Liberty Grove Church in High Point, North Carolina. He's also executive director of NIA's ARC, an education program which focuses on the role of faith in fighting AIDS. He joins us by phone from his home in High Point, North Carolina. Good of you to join us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Why is it important for African-American churches to talk about this?
Well, it's in my opinion that the African-American church can reach the largest number of people with information on any given Sunday morning during the week also. In response to that caller, just for an example, that the African-American church or the church in general can spread that information that free testing is available through local health departments. Your guest earlier indicated that no entity can combat this disease by itself, and I think that that's why it's so important for churches to be partnering with community organizations and local health as well as state health departments to provide educational opportunities through the church.
These are not easy subjects to broach. Are they discussed commonly at your church, at other Black churches?
At my church, yes. As we all have become aware of some of the stigmas that prevent the church from really openly discussing some of these issues, homosexuality, intravenous drug uses, they are barriers. But I think that one of the things that I've discovered in traveling around the nation is that the more we open up the discussion, the more questions and the more information kind of gets out there. And I think that there is truly a hunger for knowledge in the African-American community. One of the hindrances, I think, is that pastors who are employed at a local church are not as free to sometimes touch upon some of the controversies that surround HIV and AIDS in light of the stigmas. And one of the things that
For their jobs?
I think that that's a major consideration because the church has to address a lot of issues. And I know even at my church, we have people who are in the church, who are members of the church, who have been impacted by the disease, sons and daughters that have been infected with the disease and are living with the disease. And we in the church, we know how people are. We know about their lifestyles, but the thing about the church is that it can embrace people regardless of whatever situation they find themselves in.
But you understand that a lot of people might not be comfortable with the idea of, well, we've forgiven you for your sin.
Well, I think that that's a pretty bad excuse. I've been involved with HIV since 1987, and how I got involved is one of the health service organizations here called me to give spiritual support to some people who the local churches had abandoned, and they felt like they needed to have somebody come in and let them know that they were still loved by God, that they weren't bad human beings. And so I think that that's an excuse that is long overdue. And with the Baum and Gilead's week of prayer over the years, I've noticed in this country that more churches and more faith communities of all races are willing to embrace those who are living with AIDS and be welcoming congregations, as well as give aid to those who are without housing, mm-hmm. who need food, and, you know, those kinds of things.
Sure. Let's get another caller on the line. Terry's calling from Florence, South Carolina.
Yes. How you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Fine.
Yes, sir. What I want to speak on was that, yes, I do believe that in order to solve this problem in the black community, the black church must get involved. The National Baptist Convention and these other large conventions, they need to talk it up. They're not doing enough, not talking up enough, trying to prevent AIDS in the black community. And it really relies, the black community relies on the black church for a lot of these answers, and they're not giving them the answers mm-hmm. that they need.
And, okay, Terry, thanks. Well, Ron Weatherford, let me ask you first. If those big organizations emphasize these arguments, maybe local pastors would get some political cover and not be fearful for their jobs.
Well, it depends on your denomination, too. Like in my system, we're an appointed, so we can preach. And you, as you know, United Methodists probably have a reputation of being one of the most socially active of the denominations for a lot of ministers. And even in our denomination at our last general conference, we said that we were going to raise $8 million for prevention education in the United States. Unfortunately, when we go to our, like the caller said, our national conventions and our state conventions, that unfortunately a lot of that gets lost on the table. So we say that we're going to do something, but then we don't fund the program so that ministers who are able to go out and travel and teach congregations have that opportunity. So funding is a primary issue. One of the things that I have noticed over the last couple of years, if you're talking about prevention education, and it's not a knock on the CDC, but some of the focus on funding has changed. And if you look at it, the faith community really in the United States is getting very little funds to do prevention education in the faith communities. So,
Let's bring in Dr. Klitzman on that point. Should there be an emphasis on black churches?
I think black churches play a tremendous role potentially, and I think that the funding situation is something that's an important part of this debate, which is what does the NIH, what does the administration, what do state legislatures decide to fund? What prevention efforts do they want to support or not? And I should say that there's a few options they face. They face issues around whether to emphasize testing and counseling, for instance, whether to put money behind prevention efforts that might involve churches, whether to train doctors better to deal with these issues. And I think these are very important things. And running through all of this, again, is the notion, as has been said, about how difficult it is to talk about these issues. And I should say I recently published a book, Mortal Secrets, Truth and Lies in the Age of AIDS, that describe how people manage to avoid the topic, how people speak in code, how people don't want to say that they have HIV, or they'll allude to it in ways that sexual partners may misunderstand and lead to further transmission of the virus, that people have a difficult time knowing who to trust to say that they're gay, to say that they're HIV infected within the African American community and other communities as well. So I think there are some common issues that run across all of these venues, from doctors' offices to churches to community groups to other kinds of media campaigns that might be launched. And I think we need to look across the board at these kinds of issues. But funding is important. I think that the churches can play an important role. Of course, a fear is that churches funding faith-based organizations in general about HIV prevention, they may preach sort of an abstinence-only line, and that may not be the most effective line to give to people in terms of trying to prevent HIV, given that people are going to be sexually active.
And I'm afraid we're going to have to end it there. But thanks for your time today, Dr. Klitzman.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Robert Klitzman is co-director of the Center for Bioethics at Columbia University, a research scientist and assistant professor of clinical psychiatry and author of Being Positive, The Lives of Men and Women with HIV. Ron Weatherford, thank you for your time as well.
Okay. And I also have a book, Somebody's Knocking at Your Door, AIDS in the African-American Church.
Thanks very much for that.
Okay.
Ron Weatherford, United Methodist minister at Bethel Liberty Grove Church, and that's in North Carolina.